Welcome to The Aging Scientist, focusing on all things science and aging. I'm Clarissa Giebel, and I'm a researcher at the University of Liverpool, trying to tackle inequalities in dementia care and aging. In season six, I am chatting to experts about dementia in the media. Media is a broad term and can include many platforms. We encounter dementia on TV, in adverts, film, books, and social media these days much more. But is that enough? And what drives those people behind the campaigns or books to make dementia an important point of discussion? In today's episode, I'm joined by private eye cartoonist and former carer for his father, Tony Husband. Tony is an award-winning cartoonist whose work has appeared in many publications, nationally and abroad. He's worked for Private Eye for the last 38 years, and he's had over 60 books published, including Take Care, Son, a book about his dad's journey through dementia published in 2014, which led him into the dementia world, working on dementia awareness projects all over the country. United, Caring for Loved Ones Living with Dementia by Gina Awatt and illustrated by Tony is out now too. So welcome, Tony.
Thank you.
Great to have you on the show.
Thank you, yeah.
So I'm excited to talk to you. We've met a little bit at that conference in Manchester a couple of months ago. So it's nice to have a chat now about what you do and what inspires you to make those drawings as well.
Okay, that's great.
So you've been caring for your dad with dementia, and we've just mentioned you brought out your first cartoon book about dementia, Take Care, Son, The Story of My Dad and His Dementia, about those experiences. Do you want to tell us a bit about how you came to be a carer for your father?
Well, basically, it wasn't just me. There was a family, sort of like a gang of us. I've got three brothers, and one lives in Scotland, so he couldn't be as active. But my other two brothers and the families were around my dad all the time. When we started noticing, well, it was me in particular who noticed that there was something different about him and that something was happening. And it became clear that my dad had a problem. You know, we all know that you forget things, I forget things, forget names, I'm awful with names. But then there's something becomes a bit darker, something more sinister in what he was doing. Like my dad would, he didn't know how to do his tie up. He always wore a tie, very proud, smart man. You know, he didn't know how to tie shoelaces and things like that. And then he'd be ringing me up saying, I thought you were coming up today. And I said, Dad, I've been up. And you're kind of building up a picture that something wasn't right. And I went round one day to see him. He lived in a cottage in the countryside. There was a family next door, and they'd converted the barn that we used to have at the cottage into a house. So there's a young family next door, but they were out a lot. And there was a bungalow across the road, and they were out a lot. So that was it. My dad was living on with his little dog, Lossie. And I went up one day, and he was looking out of the window down towards the valley. And I said, "Are you all right, Dad?" And he said, "What's your name?" And I said, "Tony." So he said, "And what's the other lad's name, the one who paints? He's a painter and decorator, my brother." I said, "Keith." He said, "Yeah." He said, "That's not right, that." And I said, "Dad, I forget names." He said, "You don't forget your children's names." And he sat down and he was like very sad. And I thought, no, there is something wrong. So went to see the doctor, explained. He said, "Bring your dad in." And he got a note to go to the memory clinic and referred to the memory clinic. And he saw Dr. Jolly, Professor Jolly, who was eminent in the field. Probably might have retired now, but a wonderful man. And he spoke to Dad and questioned him. And, you know, my dad could remember things during the Second World War, but couldn't remember the things that happened yesterday, the typical dementia scenario. And it came back with vascular dementia. So that's when we began to care for him. Initially, we cared at the cottage, but as it progressed, as things became perhaps more dangerous for him to be on his own, we had to take the car off him because he was driving and he left the handbrake off once and the car rolled down a hill. Fortunately, there were some workmen nearby who managed to stop it, but my dad had no idea. And so there was things like that. And then he became very sort of a bit paranoid and thinking we were stealing his car to sell it. And then there was a chip pan fire, and it was okay, nothing bad happened, but it could have been very bad. And then eventually, after about a year of this dementia getting worse and worse, we found a care home, which was in Hyde, and I took him in that time, and it's in the book, to Take Care of Some Book, where he loved little Lossie, his dog, little Westie. He took it everywhere. He was frightened of Lossie going out of his sight. If I took Lossie to be groomed, he'd be waiting at the door and crying, saying, why didn't you take Lossie? Why, you know? And I said, Daddy needed cleaning and grooming. And I took my dad, and we decided that as a family, we felt guilt putting him in a care home. So we had this thing that if he goes in for respite, if he doesn't like it, we can bring him out and work something out. If he does like it, he could stay. So we went round, and the day he was going to go in, and I said, come on, Dad, we're going on a bit of a holiday. And he said, all right. And Lossie jumped on his knee in the car next to me. And we drove down and got a bag with him. And he looked back at the cottage and said, he said bye to the cottage. That was weird. He turned around and he said, bye. And he said, is your mum coming? My mum is Vera. My mum had died 15 years before, if she had cancer. And I said, no, Dad, but mum's always with you. She's always with you. So we got to the care home, and he went in, and he was holding Lossie. And what he didn't know, but what I did, was he couldn't keep Lossie. So I had to take the dog off him, and he was saying, what are you doing? I said, Dad, I've got to take the dog. And he was crying, and I was crying, and the dog was like wondering what's going on. And so I managed to get out and sat in the car, and broke my heart, really. But Lossie was great, you know. Lossie had a good time, lived here, and big garden and everything. So that's how it kind of developed. As the book, and my dad died in the care home. And about 3 months later, I was sat, well, probably longer actually, I was sat in my studio after a day's work. I got a bottle of Rioja, I got music on, and I just said out loud, my dad had passed away 6 months ago, Dad, what was it like to have dementia? Do you remember? And his voice just came back and said, I had dementia, and he asked me to remember, and laughed. So I just thought, well, thank you, Dad. And so I started this conversation with him, and I started to draw it because I think visually. So I got some A4 paper, and I just started to draw. My dad sat in the cottage, and me saying, Dad, what was it like to have dementia? Do you remember? And then him replying with that sort of witty answer. And then, well, it was like toothache, you know, that it started with an ache, but then it built and built. And then some of the incidents that happened. So by the second page, I was using colour. So by the second page, it was about incidents that happened, like him going into Hyde, the town where we live, in his pyjama bottoms and his suit jacket. And someone saying, and, you know, then leaving the tap running and losing his keys and things. And then the last page was black and white because the wine was getting to me and I couldn't be asked calling it in. He just said, can you imagine what it's like to lose memory of everything and everyone you've ever loved? Can anything be so cruel? And I said, no, Dad, I don't think it can. So I got these three pages and I liked them. I didn't know what to do with them. And I'm a member of a club called the Groucho Club in London. It's a media club, famous and notorious as well. I've been a member there for 30 odd years, and I took it there because there's a lot of media people there. And I thought, oh, Stephen Fry, I met Stephen there, and Stephen was a friend. So I rang Stephen, I said, can I send you these images? Because I knew he was involved in mental health, because, you know, he just got involved through his own issues. And he said, of course. So I emailed them to him, and then I got a message back. He rang me saying, Tony, these are beautiful, and in tears. Can I tweet them? And I said, yeah. He said, can your system take up to 50 million hits? And I said, I don't know, Stephen, let's give it a go. So it did go big, obviously. And a couple of days later, I got an email from a publisher saying, we saw your cartoons on Stephen's Twitter feed. We think it'd make a beautiful book. And that's how it came. So then I spoke to my brothers, obviously, to make sure they don't mind. And they said, you know, yeah, let's do it, because we know you can do it. That's how take care some came. And that's what then led me. It kind of just, if you Google it and go on Amazon and read some of the readers' comments, you know, it's quite moving. It's really has touched people. So
no, absolutely. So so you shared a lot about your story, which is obviously shared in the book as well, in the first book you brought out. And I can only imagine how hard it must have been. And when you spoke about the dog, I anticipated that grief to come when you were saying my dad had to enter a care home, because obviously they're sadly not allowed. So it must have been incredibly hard. And I'm thinking, when you were just saying, I've just done a few drawings one day, just almost as a outlet, bit of a therapy. Yeah. I just wanted to process it. And then from that came the whole book. It's a beautiful process though, isn't it? That you can re-engage with it as well.
It was just me in my studio one night and with a bottle of Rioja, with some my music, which I'm obsessed, not obsessed with music, but it's part of me, music. And then there's a conversation with my dad, and I just started drawing these three pages, and they're very rough. But they were the start of
So what was it like then? So you've done the three drawings, and then you've shared them with your friend, and that gone a bit viral. And then people were saying, well, we'd like you to do a book about this. How did you feel? Because when you did the three drawings, it was just on the spur of the moment, you wanted to process things, but then with the knowledge, oh, I'm now meant to draw lots of drawings about this and really dive deep into these experiences again. How was that?
Yeah, that was like going back into it. I left it and we move on, and most people move on and they get used to that. You know, they move away and things happen. But I then had to turn around and walk back into that situation with my dad and all the things, the heartbreaking things and the funny things. And I was just, and it took a lot of working out how to do it, because I've not done a book like this before. All my books are like joke books and comic books. So, but what I can do is edit something down, like cartoonists can, you know, they can strip it down like Matt in the Telegraph. You can make a front leader into a little cartoon that big and it just hit the phone. So it's that ability to just see things, strip it down to the basic. And when my drawings are very simple, but with a little quirk of a line, I can make somebody happy, sad, and get into the character. And so I just kind of went in there and remembering incidents, remembering things and, you know, noting them and then trying to put them together into a book that, you know, that would be readable and not a self-indulgent book, but something that would help people that you're not the only one. I don't know if I thought that consciously, but when I was doing it, it was helping me in a way to understand. Because you kind of just don't want to go into the detail of dementia or cancer or whatever it is. But I had to do that. I had to go into why it happened and what could be the causes and, you know, what could we have done different. And it was all that. And feeling guilt that, like there was an incident where my dad would ring me. He didn't have my other brother's phone numbers, but he had my home number. So I'd be sat working and get a phone call. I thought you were coming up. Dad had just been up and just come back, so I've got deadlines to do. Then phone call again. Have you seen Keith? I've not seen Keith. And at the time I was working for the Times newspaper, doing a daily sports cartoon for them. So I'd get a phone call at 4 o'clock from the sports desk saying, we need a cartoon about Tiger Woods or, you know, Rafa Nadal or whatever. So I'd have to do them four rough ideas, send them, they would okay one, and by 5 o'clock they would have to have the finished cartoon faxed. It was faxed in those days. But then I'd get 6-7 phone calls from my dad while I'm doing this, and I just remember once saying, "Dad, I'm trying to work here." And he went, "Oh, well, you told me you were going to come up." So I said, "Dad, I've been up twice." "Well, no, you've not." And I just put the phone down. I put the phone down on him, and then I just felt guilty. So it was no win thing. I still want this mountain thing. Is I was still able to do all this other work. Mm. And my son also at the same time was going through addiction issues. And I did a book with my son Paul about our journey through his addiction at the same time as going through a journey through dementia. So I don't know how the hell I did funny jokes. It's my release, I suppose, but I could escape into them.
Escapism, yes, probably, yeah.
But also with a benefit to everybody else, which is, you know, I know my cartoons make people laugh and people say, "Oh, you know, I'll always look for your cartoons in private eye and it helps me through the day and stuff." But this was a different sort of thing where I was going into personal grief and pain and trying to find a story and also make it readable and not frightening.
Yeah, but you mentioned before as well, and I agree, having looked at your books and the drawings and the really nicely done, and I said to you before, some of them make me weep. I'm not shy to admit it, because they are very emotional. But you mentioned as well when you read some of your book reviews online that people are saying, "Oh, well, I really feel for this. I can really empathize.
Thank you for helping me through this." And I'm on Twitter, and I put something on Twitter recently. I've written a couple of poems. I can read them later if you watch it near the end. But people, one chap saying, "I've got to thank you, Tony, for helping me through when my dad had dementia." He said, "I read your book every day."
Mm. And I think that's really important to have people out there that share their stories so publicly, yeah. And so be so, what's the word for it, approachable, I suppose, yeah. As well. You read the book and then one can send you a tweet, or one can send you an email, or write a book review or something, and you do come across them. It's not like they just go into the ether and never met, but you actually read them.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah, really important to me. And also that, you know, that the fact that these books are helping people, and I've helped people. And I didn't, that wasn't, you know, that's the bonus, really. I mean, I was doing a book to try and understand what we all, the family went through, and what it was like for my dad. And but what it's happened is it's a book for everyone. The book's for everyone who are going through this.
Absolutely. And you say everyone. So your second book, United, Caring for Our Loved Ones Living with Dementia. So that comprises of different personal stories of people. So husband and wife, or sisters, or mum and daughter. And it's very different storylines, but how the dementia affects their relationships. And the first one in particular really made me well up. But I have to look again through all of them, because they are really lovely drawn. And the storylines, you don't need much words to put across.
No, this is the thing, that's what I said. There's an author called David Sedaris, the humorist, and I know David a bit, and I sent him the cartoons and sent him the books, and he just came back and said, "Tony, you must have a fabulous editor to get everything into such a little thing." He said, "I don't know how you did that." And I said, "It was me, David. It's just natural to me." It's what I do. But this was the United one, is written by Gina Howard, who's a dementia activist. And I've worked with Gina, she lives in Exeter, on various dementia projects. She has a charity called Exeter Dementia Action Alliance. And she's very bright, very passionate about this. And she just said, you know, she had this idea of because carers aren't, they're not really thought of, you know, they're forgotten in a way, but they do such an important, vital role in society today. Without any acknowledgement, without any help, financial or, you know, educational, and they're the lost heroes, really, the forgotten heroes, or the unknown heroes. And so we said, yeah, that sounds a good idea. So together we have a lot of dementia contacts. So we started speaking to people and getting some names that we could contact. And everyone was fabulous, you know, and it happened during lockdown. So basically, Gina would contact the couple, like the first couple you mentioned, and listen to their story. And we kind of, I would sit in my home in Manchester, Gina would be in Exeter, they would be wherever they were. And she would not interview them, she would talk to them, get to them. She's very good at sort of making people at ease with themselves. And they trust her, and they trust her passion and care that they obviously has. So they were really open. So I'm in Manchester taking notes and doing little drawings and listening and laughing and crying at the same time, you know, and because they're some of the most beautiful people I've met, but they are new people. And they've devoted their lives to the person in the family that they love, the friends, and some amazing stories. And they all had to be anonymous in the end because the publishers, that's how they wanted it. But the one exception was Nobby Styles, the footballer, because everyone knows who Nobby is. So when I spoke to John, Styles is in talking to John about how his father developed dementia, how John blames heading the ball, football heading, and there's a big issue now about heading footballs, because I think 7 of the 11 players who played in the 1966 World Cup have all got dementia, and well, they've died of dementia, so it's all too much of a coincidence in a way. So we were able to bring things like that out, and also things like about children, how important children are, how much joy children bring to the people with dementia. So this book is like 7 stories of 7 different families, and you know, just beautiful. There's one story which is a Sienna story, which is a fictional one, but it's based on real life, about a carer who had an aunt, who had a grandma who had dementia, and she swore that she would do what she could to help people with dementia. And so that allowed us to bring in other things that, you know, like the children and talking to children about dementia and talking how, you know, they can impact and how help them understand what's happened to the granddad or the dad even, because there's a lot of early onset dementia.
Yeah, and reading the stories and looking at the cartoons, it brings back all the stories that I hear from the carers that I work with, not as participants, but they kind of shape our research in all aspects. We just talk to them and just hear what's important to you, what's happening, what's the difficulties, what's the issues.
Yeah.
And it's very similar to here. And I think one thing that particularly struck me as well, I think it's story number 3, Penny and Emma's story, that you drew that really nicely here in the memory clinic. Well, come back in a year. Here's your diagnosis. See you in a year. Yeah. And that's what I hear so often by people. And it takes them years to get a diagnosis often, but then afterwards, nothing.
Yeah, there was Gina, because she's very knowledgeable about what you can get and what people are entitled to, because she's been in life. And there was one couple, it was, I think it was the guy whose wife used to be a nurse. And he was saying, talking to Gina about, and she said, but don't you realise you can get, I can't remember what it was now. And he said, oh no, I'm not being told about that. Mm-hmm. And she said, I'll send you details. And he was able to get something, you know, some that he didn't realise he could get. I mean, that's so wrong. But it was Cutty and Rupert Watty's story. But they were a lovely couple. Yeah. And what they also, with a lot of the people, they would bring in the person with dementia. And it was like, really sweet to see them. And there was the Asian family up in Leeds, and this really lovely smiling mum to this lady, you know, the carer, came in and she was waving at us, and you know, and oh, how are you, and you know, it's just like really sweet. And the family where there's the daughter and the mum looking after the dad, and we just became friends, and just because they were so lovely. And I wanted the big Manchester United fans, as in I am, you know, terrible, sadly. and, you know, they watch United, the daughter and the dad watch United every time they're on. So a friend of mine has contacts at United, so I was able to open some replica shirts and send them to him, you know, just as a gift. Sent me pictures of the two of them sort of holding each other and, you know, united. And so, but it was beautiful just because, you know, just sat listening to Gina talking to these people and just letting them realize that they had a voice suddenly, whereas they never had a voice, you know. So that was the beauty of that, I think, of the book, giving these people a voice.
Absolutely. That's really, and I think that's what we're trying to do in research, but you do it in a lovely public way, giving that voice to people that often feel like something bad is happening to them and they don't have any control over it. There's no support, no care whatsoever. And I just want to pick up, you were saying you get lots of positive feedback from people who are reading this that have lived or personal experiences of dementia. Yeah. Have you noticed any feedback from people that are not directly affected by dementia, but I don't know, just lay public who are reading this, coming across this?
The places I go, you know, when people say, what do you do? And I talk about it. And then we get into conversations, like in my local, in G Cross, where I live. And they probably know more about dementia now than they would ever, because people are interested, because I think people are also aware that it could be them next. And then someone comes to me and say, I'm a bit concerned about my mom, she's doing these things, what do you think? So it's like people are coming to me, and I'm not an expert, and say, look, I'm not an expert, but, you know, it does sound as though that could be, it could be nothing, but it could, you know, it could be just an age thing, but it also could be the start of something. So I think there is more interest out there, definitely more people wanting to talk about it and understand it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, one of the poems had about 550 hits on Twitter, you know, and it's been seen 40,000 times. So I'm sure those are people who are, not everybody has an issue with dementia in those. I think there'll be people who are just, well, saw it, and it will help them understand. And I did a cartoon for Malcolm Walker, who's Bones Iceland stores. He lives near Liverpool, he's in the world, I think. And Malcolm's wife had dementia, and he raised a lot of money for them, put a lot of money into the dementia research. And he ended up buying 5,000 copies of Take Care Son to give to customers and staff so that they would be aware, you know, so that he just gave them away to people. And it was amazing. But I did a cartoon for him, which was a lady at a till in a store. And she's got a card, and she's like looking confused and puzzled. The cashier sat there, sort of looking a bit stern. And then behind is a row of people touching and looking at the watch. Hmm. And the caption is, please be patient, I may be living with dementia. And Malcolm put that over every cash desk in every store in the country.
Brilliant.
He has 900 stores. So for about a month, these were up there. And so there's things like that, then that's going into touching people who haven't come across it yet. And it's the actual, my doctor's surgery has got that poster in on the wall in the surgery. So in that way, it's touching people, you know, because they're just coming across my cartoons and curious. And a lot of people in private eye like my stuff, and they will check on it, and they will follow up on things I do. So that's how it's kind of a word of mouth, the drawing of mouth to, you know.
It's certainly a really engaging way in which you do it. It's not necessarily a one-off advert or something, but it's, you do those drawings. So.
The other thing I've done a lot of, Chris, is I do a PowerPoint presentation on Take Care Son, and it's lasts about 40 minutes, but I did it for Admiral Nurses, about 1,000 Admiral Nurses at one of the annual conventions. I did it for a group of doctors in Tameside, about 40 doctors were there. And the doctors, it was amazing, the doctors were learning. And afterwards they came up and said, I've learned more about dementia listening to your talk than I've learned in all the reference books and emails we get about dementia. So there were even the doctors and the animal nurses coming up, and they were in tears and laughing, and could see the highs and lows. And the story about taking Lossie, having to take Lossie away. But then stories about my dad thinking there were aliens outside and sending the messages on the Venetian blinds saying, come in, you know, Morse code. And it was car headlights across the valley at night. He thought there were spaceships. So there's like amusing things that we can, you know, make people smile. It made my dad laugh when they told him what they were. But it's the PowerPoint thing was before lockdown, I was doing loads and loads of them going all over the country. It did help people, and in going into places where dementia didn't exist in their lives, but letting them know what it's like for people who have it in their lives.
It's always, I mean, that's fantastic that everyone says, oh, I've learned a lot about it. But then there's a part of me thinking it's a bit frightening to hear from medics.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I imagine. That's, you know, like, well, I've taught a doctor about dementia. And it's like, that's...
Yeah. So you brought your first book out about your dad's journey on dementia, book, in 2014. So if we look at media more broadly, have you come across dementia in any type of media platform before you brought out that book? And what was it?
Well, not before, no. I kind of wasn't really looking. When Dad had dementia, I was looking for information, obviously. But I don't remember much about the media being used like that. I can't remember anything, you know, just close the door, and the dog's just walked in.
That's okay.
He just walks in and lies under my ear. I can't really pinpoint any articles. I mean, there were books, but they were all like official books and, you know, off-putting in a way, because they were like written by experts for experts rather than books about. But now it seems to be more acceptable for people to talk about their own. Like there's Wendy Mitchell, I know you know Wendy's a wonderful lady, but also author and a book, you know, so there's lots of things coming out like that, and social media helps, you know. I mean, I've worked with the Alzheimer's Society, the last one was doing a cartoon about children, and it's called There's Something Different About Granddad, and it's about a little boy who knows there's something wrong with his granddad because his granddad's doesn't call him by the right name, and he also sort of keeps telling him the same stories and doesn't know how to work his remote control. And then eventually his mum and dad having a chat with him and his sister and saying that his granddad's got something called dementia, he will forget things, but what he'll never forget, that he loves you. And so the little boy then goes and says, right, well, I'll always love granddad, and I'll be granddad's memory and his guide. So it's kind of about how the little children are very bright and very empathetic.
Yeah.
So.
Do you feel then that there's much more being done in the media now, much more awareness being raised, and do you feel it's enough?
I don't think it can be enough. I think there's about overkill perhaps, but I think with Take Care, and the Daily Mail ran the whole book in one episode, in one issue. Mm-hmm. And as did German magazine Bild, newspaper. So that was a big thing. I've won, it's called the Older People's Media Award, and just by Barchester Healthcare. It's a special award for coverage of people, mm-hmm. you know, about dementia in the media. Mm-hmm. I know that there's been a lot of films coming out recently. Michael Caine was in one. And, you know, lots of things. I remember there's with Thora Herding, it was, you know, so there's it's getting more into the mainstream now, and there are so many books and some films and television. It is out there now, and it won't go away. And there's some very talented people working on it, and, you know, and passionate people, so, you know, who've devoted their lives to it. So
My parents and my family still struggle to understand sometimes what I do as part of work. So I think you showing me that German version of your book, I think I might give that to them for Christmas and share. This is dementia. This is what I work on.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what it was published. It was a nice It was published in 2015. Mm-hmm. And it's, I'll send you an image of the.
Yes, please.
Deutsch. I'll send you a picture of it.
Okay, thank you.
But yeah, it looks good. And it's a really, whereas with the English version, it's quite a soft.
Yeah.
The German one is a hardback.
Uh-huh.
It's really substantial. And yeah, I was really chuffed when they did that.
That looks good. Looks good. Yeah. That's great. It's lovely speaking to you. And it for me, it's nice to hear about your process of how you came about doing the drawings in the first place well. One night I just sat down and had to let process it and deal with it. So that story behind it is great to hear as well. So I think that's all we've got time for. Do you want to read some of the statements out? Yes, please.
I've done two, well, the lot of poems. I've also written some songs, by the way, based on the poems.
Okay.
I can send you those.
Yep.
We did a short film with Sir Tony Robinson, mm-hmm. based on my storyboard about it's called Joe's Journey.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a chap who goes looking for his mum, and he's in his 70s, and it basically, he goes to his mum's house thinking he's, and he gets lost.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, when his family pick him up, they walk away, and he's being sat next to his wife's grave, his mum's grave. So it's, but I'll send you a few things if you want.
Yeah, that'd be great.
But this one is called, I did this yesterday, or the other day, it's called Top of the Pops. Did I once tell you I played in a band? I don't know its name, but you'll understand. Why, yes, we appeared on Top of the Pops, toured with the Beatles, Stones, and the Four Tops. I have three children, I think my wife died, can't remember her name, but I've tried and tried. So I sit here in my comfy chair, searching for memories so rarely there. But sometimes, like magic, all becomes clear, here with my family on Brighton Pier, laughing, singing, eating ice creams, talking and loving and fulfilling our dreams. Then without warning, the curtain drops. Did I tell you I appeared on Top of the Pops? So that was one. And then this one was about, I was with my dad and he was at the cottage and he hadn't said anything. You know, I'd been there about an hour and I said, we're just staring out the window. I didn't know what to say, to us, trying to get a conversation, but he was gone. And then I just said, oh, Dad, United on TV tonight.
Mm.
Oh, that's good, son. And, you know, so we probably won't say that now, actually, but it's another story. So this is called When I Could Remember. And I was with him. I got home and I just wrote this. It just came out. When I could remember. I can just about remember when I could remember everything of the thoughts in my head and the pleasures they could bring. But I know the darkness now, and it's getting darker still. My mind, it seems, is closing down and not of my free will. Please sit with me and hold my hand to let me know you understand. Although my mind is not so clear, I'm still me and I'm still here. So that was the thought that, you know, he was there.
Mm.
He was off somewhere, but he was there. So those are...
No, they're beautiful and they capture it really nicely as well. Are you looking to write a proper poem book on dementia now, next?
That's a good idea, isn't it? Well, actually, I think Jean and I are probably talking about doing another book, just working on between the images, the Sienna character,
mm-hmm.
for making, broadening her life out. So there's so many ways she could be a voice for carers, for people with dementia, for care homes. You know, as a sort of a, you know, she could use her, you know, with the children and with pets and things like that. Music's massive for people with dementia. So there's so many things. And then so many things like the doctor's surgery didn't know that when I saw my doctor and just when I said, and he said, we put that dementia sign up that you did. And I said, yeah, I know, it's great that. I said, but you realise you've got the black mat as you go in to the surgery. And he said, yeah. And I said, a lot of people with dementia might think that's a hole or water, and they'll be trying to cross it.
Mm.
Oh, no, I didn't know that. So the things like, again, the doctors, these are things I've just picked up and can pass on, which is nice. But it also, you know, it shouldn't have to be like me as a cartoonist. Shouldn't be the guide for doctors. But whatever it takes, whatever it takes.
No, you're right. You shouldn't be the one who has to point these things out. You're right. But it would be lovely to see and hear more of those poems. So I'm sure others would agree.
I've done a number, and I'll send you the songs, mm-hmm. and I'll send you the little film.
Yes, that'd be great.
It's only 4 minutes long, but it's there's a bit where I steal the whole show because across the road that's Johnny, and you know I just steal the film, obviously.
Oh, I'll have a look. Sounds good. It's been great talking to you, Tony. Yeah, it's informing me as well how it works and how you came about doing it.
Yeah.
And I will include all your links that you want to be included in the biography of the podcast episode.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you want to find out more about dementia in the media, including with the UK Alzheimer's Society, tune into the next few episodes of this season. But for now, thank you so much, Tony.
Thank you, pleasure. Thank you. It's been enjoyable.